Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. We're going to look back at week two in the NFL and ahead to week three. Lots and lots of storylines. So joining me as ever is my usual partner from Sky Sports coverage of the NFL, Jeff Reinbold. And Jeff, we know that once professional football seasons start, it's a grind. There are no days off. So where are you, my friend?
You're taking a shot, aren't you? I am sitting in Key West, Florida right now, in one of the most beautiful places that you've ever seen, and just enjoying my bye week. We had 5 days off, so I jumped on the airplane, flew out of Buffalo, got down here to Miami, and drove 5 hours into the Keys. And this is the end of the earth, man. This is as far down as you can go. We're 90 miles from Havana.
All right, well, look, I'm going to take a shot. If I'm sitting in rainy London, I'm looking out the window now, overlooking Oxford Street. It's raining cats, dogs, and any other animals you can think of. It's cold. I had to get the coat out this morning. So, you know, but at least I'm not in a storeroom. The last time you recorded from a beach, I was locked in the storeroom. So I guess, you know, I've taken a little step up.
Yeah, it sounds like we're moving up, but it's that cold in London right now, huh?
It is. It's getting chilly, and it's getting chilly for some of the teams around the NFL, and we're going to talk about some of the big issues in the early stages of the season. Some high-profile teams have started the year 0-2. Seattle, Baltimore, and Indianapolis, to name a few. There are some injuries that we want to get to. We want to talk about some of the bigger aspects of what's going on around the NFL. We won't get into every game from week two. We will make our picks for week three, and we'll answer your questions in the mailbag. Jeff, let's start with the big news then. So Tony Romo breaks his left collarbone. He's out for at least 8 weeks. He doesn't need to have surgery, but this was a great quote. It apparently has left Jerry Jones feeling as low as a crippled cricket's ass, is what Jerry says.
I saw his reaction post-game, and you could sense just how devastated he is because, you know, all of Cowboy Nation's got to feel it now because you lose your best receiver the first week, probably the number one offensive threat that you have, and then come back the next week and lose your quarterback. And again, when you look at what's behind him, you might even be lower than a crippled cricket's ass if you consider the fact that you're Brandon Weeden is now going to be your starter. And we saw the Brandon Weeden movie in Cleveland. It wasn't very pretty.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And I think they're working out some quarterbacks today, but I think that's more for depth. They're looking at Matt Flynn is going to be in there. And I think there's a few others from knocking around Josh Johnson, but that's purely depth. I mean, they're going with Brandon Weeden for now. A couple of other quarterbacks, Jeff, who are injured. Drew Brees has a rotator cuff injury. We don't know his status yet for this weekend's game against Carolina. Some had suggested in reports that he's out for several weeks. Sean Payton has said those reports are inaccurate, but Brees is getting a second opinion on that. And Jay Cutler is out 2 weeks with a hamstring injury. So we're seeing some of these quarterbacks drop now.
Yeah, you know, and in a quarterback-driven league, Neil, it is devastating to your football team when you lose, a starter, and particularly when you lose, in the case of New Orleans, you lose a franchise guy and your leader on offense. Cutler obviously has been a struggle. It's been a struggle in Chicago, and this will give Bears fans who've been really wanting to have him replaced an opportunity to see what's behind him and what the future in Chicago may hold. And again, you talk about those guys that are, you know, it seems like it's the usual suspects. Every time a quarterback goes down, there's Josh Johnson in there, there's Matt Flynn in there. But those guys are just that. They're depth guys and stopgap guys. You really cannot replace a starter at that position that's, you know, as well respected and well versed in the offense and really the leader of your football team as you have in guys like Romo and Brees.
Jeff, I want to dig right into the heart of the problems with the Philadelphia Eagles a little bit later. So, we don't have to go all into the Eagles right now, but staying with the news and staying with injuries, on the defensive side of the ball, Kiko Alonso, who of course they gave up a lot to go and get him in the offseason. They traded away LeSean McCoy to go and get Kiko Alonso. Early reports are he's re-injured that knee. I mean, he did go out of the game against Dallas on Sunday night, but early reports coming out now are that he's re-injured that same knee. and he could be done for the year. I mean, this is a devastating blow as well when he's part of a trade that you gave up so much to go and get him.
Yeah, and that's, you know, but that's football. You know, I mean, really, I don't want to diminish it, and certainly never diminish a player's injury, but, you know, you got to recognize that there's risk involved in the game. Now, they took Kiko, and he had the ACL injury in Buffalo and had a history of, you know, injuries that have been problematic for him over the course of his career all the way back to college. And so, you know, it was buyer beware when they made the trade, and certainly you don't want to see it happen, but it's just the realities of life in the game.
Yeah, and I don't think there's an epidemic going around the league, Jeff, but there are injuries that are happening every Sunday. And I was watching some of the late game between Green Bay and Seattle on Sunday night, and you know, the Packers started off fast, and then they kind of hit the skids because Devontae Adams went out injured, and Eddie Lacy went out injured. So it looks like injuries are impacting pretty much every game in the NFL. So it got me thinking, you know, the NFL is creating so much wealth for itself, so much money, and I don't know whether bigger rosters are the answer, but I wanted to talk to you about that. We know that, you know, every NFL roster is 53 men. Now, on a game day, you have to make 7 players inactive, so you have 46. I understand why you do that, because, you know, you want my team to line up with 46 healthy players against your 46 healthy players. So you want a level playing field there. But, you know, I mean, should we be looking at 60-man rosters, 65-man rosters? Would it make a difference, Jeff? Would it improve the product on the field, or would teams still just be playing their starters, and if those guys go down, you're looking for a replacement? I mean, I don't know if there's an epidemic or if there's an answer, but I wonder what bigger rosters would do.
Well, I think that the Players Association is going to, you know, take a look at that real hard, because where you get the number of snaps that a player has to take, not only in the games but during the week in practice, how you practice, all those things impact a team's ability to stay healthy over the course of the season. And some of it's just, frankly, just luck, you know, just the ability to not have those kind of catastrophic injuries. You know, we really, there's a saying in the business, Neil, that the teams that stay the healthiest and are playing their best football at the end of the season, not after week two, but at the end of the season, are usually the teams that have the best chance to go on and win a championship. And, you know, you look at these kinds of injuries when you have Romo, for example, with the collarbone. And collarbone's a really nasty one for a quarterback, because it requires a tremendous amount of healing, and they will not okay him to go back on the field as long as there's any kind of image in the X-ray that hints that the bone is not fully healed. And so now you've got not only the time it takes to heal, but then for him to get his arm in shape to throw, and, you know, again, that's a long time. And we talk about ACLs. ACLs typically are, you know, end of the year type injury, end of the season type injuries. And, you know, when those kinds of injuries hit your top line players, it's going to affect your football team. There's no question about it.
But it seems a shame, Jeff, that it comes down to luck and injuries at the end of the year. But that's just the reality of any sport, I suppose, right?
Well, I think particularly our game, because of the fact that it is such a contact sport, and you've got to play 16 weeks just to get to the playoffs. And, you know, again, it doesn't take very many injuries to a team at key positions for that team to go from being you look at Dallas. Everybody had Dallas amongst, you know, the top 10 teams in the league, and a team that had a legitimate chance to be a Super Bowl contender. And then in the first 2 weeks, you lose your two best offensive players. Well, that's going to be devastating to the Cowboys, and they're going to have to find a way somehow to mitigate those losses. And that means other guys are going to have to play better, going to have to step up and take feature roles. And you know, in the case of Whedon, that offensive line, which the Cowboys have so much faith in and maybe the best offensive line in football, they're going to have to run the ball, and they're going to have to take the pressure off of a guy that's not good enough, frankly, in my opinion, to win games for you at quarterback. So that's just the reality that the Cowboys are facing, and the defense is going to have to step up.
Yeah, and that defense and that team, you know, in that 8-week spell, they're going to play New England, they're going to play Seattle, they get Philadelphia again, they probably will have to play Carolina if Tony doesn't come back until December. Those are some of the games that the Cowboys have got coming up in the next few weeks, and they're going to have to scrap it out, aren't they, Jeff? You're going to, you know, if you have to go 4-4 and you make a run at the end of the year, that's the hand they've been dealt now.
Yeah, and again, when you think about it, you want to be just, and that's the important point. If they can just be close, if they can just get to the playoffs and then get Romo back healthy, they may be able to make a run. And, you know, think about it. You mentioned another team, Neil, that I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of pressure on Seattle right now. You know, it's one thing to lose one of your best players to injury. It's another thing to not have one of your best players because you can't come to a contractual agreement with him. And that's going to put a tremendous amount of pressure on the Seahawks to get, you know, to get Chancellor in there, because they need that presence in the secondary. And right now, the Seahawks at 0-2, you know, they don't want to go any, you know, they don't want to lose any more, because Arizona has shown that they're a very, very good football team. They're good teams in that division. And so for the Seahawks, you know, there's a guy standing out there healthy, ready to play, and you need to get him into camp, and you need to get him, you know, playing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to take a look at some of the big talking points from week two in the NFL. Again, like we said, we won't go into every game. We never do here on Inside the Huddle. We like to look at the big talking points. And, Jeff, I want to get something off my chest, and I want to start with last night. Monday Night Football, the New York Jets beat the Indianapolis Colts 20-7. Okay, I'm not going to give my guy a free pass. Let me just go there right now. Andrew Luck has to play better. Andrew Luck must do better than he has done in the first two games of the year. He's forcing the football. He talked in the offseason about how he needed to tidy up the interceptions. Well, there were three more of them last night. But I don't like the way things are shaping up in Indianapolis. And it feels to me like it's a little bit of a house of cards. And I've got a couple of quotes I wanted to read out to you. I'll get this off my chest and then you can have your say. Chuck Pagano, the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, came out after the game talking about Andrew Luck. And he said, he's got to take care of the football. It's not that hard. It's not trigonometry. Okay, that's fair enough. You're the head coach. That's your prerogative to say that about your quarterback. Andrew actually then talked about the offensive line and refused to put any blame on an offensive line which resembles Swiss cheese. This one gets my goat, Jeff. Dwayne Allen, I'm going to say it. Who the hell is Dwayne Allen? He's done very little since he's been in Indianapolis. I know injuries have affected his game. He's never had more than 45 catches in a season. A couple of seasons, he had one catch. One season, he had another three catches. Dwayne Allen has called out his own quarterback and said, first things first is getting the ball into the playmakers' hands. It does no good to have all these playmakers and not utilize them. Again, Andrew Luck hasn't said anything about anyone else on that offense. And this is the one that would have me worried if I'm a Colts fan. Chuck Pagano was questioned about the offensive line and about, you know, whether it was putting too much pressure on Andrew Luck. Pagano said, that has been the case for 3 years now, hasn't it? He should be more than comfortable dealing with it. Well, I'll tell you what, he's your franchise quarterback. How about not have to have him be comfortable behind a bad offensive line? Why don't you fix it? And I think that speaks to the problems that might be going on with Chuck Pagano and with Ryan Grigson, the general manager, with Jim Irsay all the way up to the front office. It feels like this season is about to implode on the Indianapolis Colts. And I'm not trying to give Andrew Luck a free pass because he hasn't played well in the first 2 weeks. I do think that sometimes his games, when he's losing, they can be made to look worse because he doesn't care about personal statistics. So one interception can quickly become two and three and so on. But it's the offensive line. It's the receivers not getting open. They're actually playing not bad on defense. Surprisingly, that was the problem last year. But it looks like everyone in Indianapolis at the moment is pointing the finger at the quarterback, and I actually think that's wrong, and I think that's unfair.
Well, I think I'm glad that you got that off your chest now. Do you feel better?
I do. Thank you very much.
I think, you know what, let's go back to preseason, and you and I had this conversation when the first little bits of smoke started to come out of the facility in Indianapolis, and how there was a disconnect between Pagano and Ryan Grigson, and that Pagano was unhappy. You know, there was just discord in the house.
Yep.
And you never want to have that before the season even gets started. Now I think we're starting to see some of the roots of that discord. And again, the ironic thing about the comment that Pagano made relative to the offensive line He said, well it's been that way for 3 years. He should be comfortable that way. That, to me, is an indictment of the organization and the personnel that they have. You've been there 3 years. You know you have deficiencies in an area. Why is it not fixed? Why is it 3 years later your franchise quarterback is still having to, you know, run for his life and is getting hit as much as he's getting hit? I don't care who you are and how tough you are. You stand in there and you get hit and you get pressured the way he's, you know, having to deal with pressure. It's going to affect your ability to deliver the football accurately. Now, again, I'm always really curious to see how coaches respond when things don't go well for them, because we always talk to the players about you've got to be able to handle adversity. That's the one thing that you're guaranteed in pro football, is that you're going to face adversity. Well, here you are facing adversity at 0-2, and the thing that I, you know, you read the comments, and what's Chuck doing? Is he pointing a finger at his football team publicly? Mm. Yeah, that, I mean, if you want to say those things about your franchise quarterback, that's your right as the head coach. But to me, you better say those in the meeting room, in the team meeting room, but not publicly, not take shots at your own guy publicly. And I, you know, again, Andrew will handle that extremely well because of the kind of person that he is, but the frustration that everybody's feeling right now in Indianapolis, which is manifest in comments like Alan's comments, those are the things that can rip your football team apart. And, you know, that's not a good, healthy situation right now. And certainly they need a win. And, you know, again, they've not played well 2 weeks in a row on offense, which is what everybody thought was going to be their meal ticket this year, their offense and their ability to throw the football and all the weapons that they had. But sometimes, Neil, you can get caught up in all that hype, and you have to recognize you still have to go out and play, and everybody's got to play. The offensive linemen have got to play. The receivers have got to get open. The quarterback's got to get the ball there. If there's one flaw in Luck that I've seen over the last couple of years, is that at times, because he's such a great competitor and he wants to win so much, that he will try and do things outside of himself.
Agreed.
And that's where the interceptions come.
Yeah, they do. And when I spent, I did a fan night with Andrew a couple of years back, and I remember him saying, if he's losing, he doesn't care if he throws one interception or five. So I do, that's where I think sometimes it can look worse than he actually is playing. I don't think he's playing very well at all, but I think it was a stark contrast to me when he refused to be critical of anyone else. You know, he said, he was asked why they lost. He said it was all down to him. Well, we know that's never the case. It's never all down to one player. The irony is that Chuck Pagano said it's not that hard, it's not trigonometry. Andrew's a smart guy, he probably knows trigonometry.
He certainly, you know, you don't get an engineering degree from Stanford and be a dumb guy. And let me just say this, Chuck Pagano's never stood in there, you know, again, and I'm a coach, and I love coaches, but you know what? You go stand in there and tell me it's not hard.
Yeah.
You go stand in there and have those guys chasing you around like he gets chased around. And you know, frankly, way too many times, and you've seen this now, you've seen this movie for 3 years, way too many times has he had to do too much for that team to succeed. And again, if there's a finger to be pointed in Indianapolis, to me, it's where are the better offensive linemen? Because with free agents to try and improve a position that frankly has not improved.
And Jeff, I know sometimes we're accused in the media of stirring up stories and making more of stories than is actually out there. But the reason I said about this feels like a bit like a house of cards is because these kind of rumblings are what we got last year in San Francisco. And that proved to be real. Jim Harbaugh was parted ways with the 49ers, and now Jim Tomsula is in as head coach. But these factors are real on these teams. Pagano didn't sign a contract extension with the Colts. He's already gone on record as saying, this is my last job in the NFL. You know, there's rumors of the philosophical differences between the front office and the coaching staff. All of these, and now you've got the coach pointing at his star quarterback and the tight end, you know, having a go at the quarterback. I mean, this is all, it feels a lot like San Francisco last year, and that proved to be real because of the way things unfolded after the season.
Well, I'll tell you what, another place that was almost this carbon copy story was Chicago.
Yeah.
And, you know, they came in with great expectations, and Cutler was going to do this, and he had all these weapons on offense, and the offensive line was better. and then it started to fall apart, and then it got in the paper, and then, you know, Brandon Marshall's making comments, and they're talking about the quarterback's not this and the quarterback's not that, and, you know, the head coach, you know, appears to lose control of his football team, and the defense can't play, and all of a sudden, all of it starts circulating, and you just get this almost like it's the perfect storm. I mean, just everybody's pointing their finger, everybody's blaming everybody else. There's no sense of, hey, we're in this together, we're going to fight our way through it. We're 0-2, but hey, we got 14 games left to play. You got your whole divisional schedule to play. And frankly, they're in a division that's not that tough. So, you know, right now there's no reason to press the panic button, but that seems to be what's happening in Indianapolis. Now, I understand that you're under tremendous scrutiny when you're, you know, coaching in the National Football League and playing in the National Football League, but hey, that's what you signed up for, right? If you can't deal with it, then you don't belong, you know, in that job or, you know, working in that league, because that's what you're going to get in the NFL. And at 0-2, it's going to even get worse until you start to win some football games.
All right, so I don't want to make this the Woe Is Me podcast, Jeff. So before I get on to a couple of other teams that have had some early season struggles, let's look at just briefly on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We talked about the Bucs last week. They lost 42-14 at home in week one. They go on the road. They've lost seven straight to the New Orleans Saints. And it's the Buccaneers who get the 26-19 win. What did you make of Jameis Winston and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Well, here's the thing with Tampa. My takeaway from that game was more what's wrong with the Saints.
Yeah, me too, but I didn't want to moan about them.
Pardon me?
That was exactly my thought, but I didn't want to dwell on the negative for a minute, but the Saints are in trouble. They've now lost.
I think the thing that you saw with Winston in this game is if he will protect the football, right? And, you know, his numbers, he's going to always have, until he grows a little bit in the position, he's going to, if he throws the ball 25, 28 times, that's enough for him. And as long as he doesn't turn it over, they're going to have a chance. Now, you saw his athleticism when he got out, you know, and he can make plays outside of the pocket a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's not a dynamic guy, but, you know, he showed some good things. And, you know, he's 14 of 21, 207 yards. But the critical thing to me in this game was the turnovers. And you look at the teams that are struggling right now, and they just turned the ball. Like Breeze fumbles. They fumbled. They had five fumbles, I believe, in the game. Oh. Lost two, but five fumbles tells you that they're not protecting the ball. Now, some of that credit's got to go to Lovie's defense, because if you know Lovie's history, that's one of the things they preach every day in practice. You know, get the ball out. You know, go back to his time in Chicago, to his time in St. Louis as defense coordinator. They've always been a turnover causing defense. That's why they play that cover two system where they can all have eyes on the ball and break on the ball. And when it works and you get turnovers, you have a chance to win. When you don't get turnovers and you kind of play that softer defense, then, you know, it's going to be tough for you to win. But they got what they needed, which was turnovers, and protected the ball. And if Tampa's going to do anything this year, that's going to be their recipe for success.
Yeah, I was with you, Jeff. I thought the Saints should be very, very worried. I think they look a shadow of their former selves, and they really, I don't want to say it's the beginning of the end there, but they've got salary cap problems. They don't seem to protect Drew Brees very well, and they traded for Max Unger. You know, they got Max Unger in there instead of Jimmy Graham. They gave up a lot of their offense to try and upgrade their offensive line and upgrade their defense. It feels like... there's a lot of negativity around the New Orleans Saints at the moment. Jeff, I wanted to touch on one thing. You just mentioned about trends that we see around the NFL, and obviously turnovers correlate to winning games so heavily each week in the NFL. But through the first 2 weeks of the season, Jeff, lots of big passing plays. You know, Torrey Smith took 175 yards this week for the 49ers. Yeah, Travis Benjamin had all those explosive plays for the Cleveland Browns. It seems like it's bombs away and long touchdown passes. Now, are they, in your view, when you look at those as coaches, are they great plays on the offense? Are they defensive breakdowns? Or are we seeing a lot of, I know, you know, when I was out in New York this year, Darrell Revis talked about how so many teams put their cornerbacks on an island. They play man coverage and they go aggressive on defense. Why are we seeing so many of these?
Well, I think it's a combination of a couple of things. Number one, first and foremost, is the rules changes that are now in effect in the NFL, where you cannot put your hands on guys past 5 yards. And that has really changed the vertical passing game in the NFL. Because now, as you say, those corners who would rely on their ability to disrupt the top end of the route, of a receiver's route with their hands, they can't do that anymore. And now what that does is it creates what we call free access for the receiver to get to the second level of the coverage. And so many of these guys have such great speed. And, you know, it's going to open up that vertical aspect of the passing game that, frankly, you could choke off before when you could bang receivers around. Now, defenses, in order to get pressure on the quarterback, well, a lot of the defensive coordinators now are starting to play more man-to-man outside, single coverage outside. And you get single coverage enough in a game, let's say you're going to be in single 35 snaps in a game, you're going to get singed. And you saw it again. Travis Benjamin catches what? I think he caught 3 balls, but it was two big ones, two big, big, long touchdown passes. And really, Cleveland, if you take away Benjamin's yardage, both all in the punt return game, and those two plays, Cleveland did very little on offense to win that football game. But they got big plays. And, you know, I just think that that's going to be the reality in the National Football League as we go forward with the rule changes, with the speed of the receivers, and with the fact that defensive coordinators, in order to try and get pressure on the quarterback, are putting their corners in more one-on-one situations. And frankly, more offenses are in 3 and 4 wides where you've got vertical people all over the field.
Jeff, I saw a great stat about Travis Benjamin. So he was, I think, only the second player in NFL history to have 4 touchdowns over 50 yards in the first 2 weeks of the season. And we've seen him explode all over the field. But the most remarkable part of that statistic was the other guy, was the great Jim Brown in 1963. Jim Brown's a fullback, man. He's scoring from all over the field.
He was probably the greatest player that ever played this game, in my opinion. Because he was so much better than the guys he was playing against in that day and time. Jim Brown, if you look at those old movies of Jim Brown and you say that there's a guy that you could take that guy out of 1964 and put him in, you know, 2015 and he'd look the part. He'd be a dynamic running back in today's game, much less that game.
They called him Superman in cleats. Let's look at, it was a lot of fun going into week two because there was a lot of talk from those Buffalo Bills, Jeff. They were calling out the New England Patriots, and the Patriots wouldn't play ball. They wouldn't answer back, as they never do. They waited till they got to upstate New York to play the game, and the Patriots won it 40-32. Tom Brady flings it all over the field, basically. I mean, there was only 10 carries from New England's running backs. Brady has 466 yards passing. Rex Ryan said he was out-coached by Bill Belichick. My takeaway from this, Jeff, as I was watching this game in the Sky Sports studios, was that it looked like just a little bit the stage was a bit too big for the Bills. And I wondered, you know, in coaching terms, whether that would hurt the Bills or whether that will help them down the road. Because, you know, maybe now they know, you know, you can be fired up. They were fired up early on, but you got to try and play within yourself and play with that discipline still. Do you think, although the defeat hurts, that Rex will be looking for the coaching points to take out of that and teach his team so they're prepared the next time, whether it be in Foxborough or whether it be when the Jets come to play at Buffalo or whether it be a playoff game, just to make sure his team's better prepared?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. You bring about a great point, right? Let's look at how Chuck Pagano dealt with a bitter defeat and how Rex Ryan dealt with a bitter defeat. Chuck points the finger at his quarterback, points the finger at his offensive line, points the finger at the GM. Rex, on the other hand, points the finger right at himself. I got out-coached. And what that does for you, even if you don't believe it, if you say it publicly, then what you do is you take the pressure off of your players. Because I'm going to tell you something, Rex Ryan wasn't playing defensive back for the Buffalo Bills, and they got torched. I mean torched. Repeatedly. But what he did, and this is where he's smart. He put it right back on him, which will allow his team to kind of lick their wounds and come back and play again. So I think he handled it the way it's best handled as you go through this adversity. In the locker room, in the team meeting room, in the individual meetings that go on during the course of the week, he'll address where the breakdowns occurred. He'll address how they couldn't cover the back out of the backfield, or how Gronkowski was still, as much attention as they gave him, was still able to have over 100 yards receiving. How Brady could throw the ball with such, you know, accuracy, and they weren't able to disrupt the timing and the really, really well drilled aspects of the Patriot passing game. Because really, the Patriots don't care statistics to them are secondary. They don't care how many yards they rush for, because if you line all those guys up on the line of scrimmage, they know they can't run the football. But then you better be able to handle the back in the flat. You better be able to handle Edelman on the crosser. You better be able to handle Gronkowski when he's split out wide. All of those things are aspects of, you know, what make them so tough to defend, because they don't care. But if you play maximum coverage against them, now they're going to run the football on you. Mm. So they'll scratch where it itches, and that's one of the reasons why they're so good.
Rex Ryan's always had that bravado, Jeff, and I don't mind it. I think it's good that his players feel they can speak out ahead of a game, and they can go with a sense of aggression into a game. I like that. And as Rex said leading up to that game against New England, he said, this is not open heart surgery. This is a game, you know. So I think he puts it into perspective, probably better than Belichick does, actually, who puts a muzzle on all of his players. But you know, Rex has that bravado. Rex has that aggression that, you know, comes from that great family tree, and he has that confidence and a degree of cockiness, I think. I think there's a bit of that there, which is a good thing as well. I don't think it's bad to have that edge. But therefore, Jeff, it's going to hurt him that he didn't get any pressure on Tom Brady, because that's his calling card. That's his calling card, and he's got one of the best defensive fronts in the league.
Yes, that's exactly true. So it'll eat at him. But again, I have much respect for him that he took it himself. He didn't put it on the players. He took it himself, which is what you need to do publicly, and then get it fixed internally and look at what you did scheme-wise, what they did to you. Because, again, one of the things that you know, Neil, is the NFL is a copycat league. And if you have trouble with something, you can bet you're going to see it from your next opponent. And you'll see it from the next opponent after that if you don't get it fixed. So, again, their inability to get pressure on the quarterback, their inability to handle all those intermediate and short bouts, those are going to be things that they're going to have to shore up in Buffalo, or you're going to continue to see those things over the course of the season. It's just the way life is in the NFL.
One of the teams that struggled in week two, and they struggled in week one as well, the Philadelphia Eagles. I teased it earlier, Jeff, that we want to get into some of their problems. And, I mean, Where do you start? They lost at home 20-10 to the Dallas Cowboys, and the Cowboys lost Tony Romo in that game. Next up, the Eagles have got the New York Jets, so it doesn't get any easier for an offense that is really struggling. Sam Bradford has looked uncertain, looked tentative, and DeMarco Murray has 21 carries on the season for 11 yards. Jeff, I think Chip Kelly is always going to have criticism and pressure on him, and I know, you know, you can look at, we don't know what happened behind the scenes or what was happening in the locker room, but I do know for a fact that DeSean Jackson, LeSean McCoy, Todd Herrmanns, Evan Mathis, Jeremy Maclin were all pretty good football players. Anytime you ship that number of players out of your building, you better win with what you bring in instead, and at the moment the Eagles aren't.
Yeah, and, you know, when you make those kinds of decisions, those kinds of personnel decisions on high-profile players, you're putting yourself out there for criticism if it doesn't go well. And I think that's something that Chip recognizes. I don't think he runs away from it or shies away from it. He has a firm, firm belief in what he does and how they operate and how he wants his football team to be. In the off season, he got the power to be able to have total say on personnel and more about what goes on in that Eagles organization. And, you know, this is one of those things. When you want that kind of power, when you get that kind of power, then you also get the scrutiny and the criticism that goes with that kind of power. He's dealing with that right now. When I watch him, and I've watched them both games, and I watch him, there's some things that concern you. The pace that they play at is both a blessing and a curse.
Yep.
When it's going good, it's really good. But it's tough on your defense. And they're trying to play a style of defense that goes hand in hand with that. But that only works if you're scoring points. And right now, they're not scoring points. They haven't really, that offense hasn't really taken off. You see spurts of it, little bits and pieces of it, but they haven't got it going like they need to get it going. And then over on the other side, on the defensive side, the Eagles are trying to force the issue. There's a lot of pressure, a lot of pressure zone, a lot of pressure man. And, you know, they put, you talk about putting your corners on an island, that, they do that repeatedly. And I don't know if right now they're good enough up front against teams that want to really pound the ball at them. So they've got some things they got to fix in Philadelphia too. Like you mentioned, I think Bradford looks like he's not really sure. Number one, I don't think he's really convinced on that knee of his yet. And number two, I don't think he feels really comfortable in the offense yet. I think that'll come. And, you know, certainly Chip's going to stick with it. But it was interesting Chip's comment in the media that they're going to evaluate everything. And that's, you know, again, that's him. He's going to do that. And he's going to start with himself. I can guarantee you that. He'll look in the mirror and say, okay, what do we need to do? Because one of the things he doesn't have, and I know him personally, one of the things Chip doesn't have is a big ego that's going to say, well, you know, I'm not changing. Now, he may look at the situation and say, I still believe it's in our best interest to stay the course that we're going right now, but that's not going to come out of stubbornness. That's going to come out of that's what he really believes as he picks it apart and analyzes it and looks at the tape and talks to the players and talks to the coaches and does all of the things that you do in preparation for this next week, because they've got to get better. You go to 0-3, lose to the Jets, go to 0-3, and it's going to be tough, even though you're in a division now where your arch rival doesn't have its starting quarterback probably for the next 10 weeks. And your other arch rival is, you know, can't seem to close games out in the fourth quarter, and you got the third team in your division you should beat because you're a better football team than they are. So it's not, if you're an Eagle fan, I know this is not a great place to be 0-2, but if you're going to be 0-2, remember there's 14 games left to play and you're playing in a division where you still have control of things.
Jeff, you know him personally then. Do you think he genuinely feels that he can plug any player into his system and that it's the system that works? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, obviously schemes are important for you coaches, but any scheme can be defeated by another scheme. And if somebody schemes so well that they take away what Philadelphia do offensively, he hasn't got a true number one receiver that he can just throw it up to. I'm thinking of, okay, the play I've got in my head is the Atlanta Falcons against the New York Giants from this past weekend. They're backed up on their own goal line. They've not got anything going on at the time at the Falcons. Matt Ryan throws one up. He just throws one up, and Julio Jones, who's a dominant number one difference-making wide receiver, leaps over the head of the Giants defensive back, who was in better position, and makes the catch. I don't know if there's an offensive player in Philadelphia at the moment who is that difference maker who could take over a game if the scheme is defeated.
Well, I would my counterpoint to that would be, Neil, how many teams have one of those guys?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the reality of it is there's only one Julio Jones, and there are very few guys even in his class in the league. I mean, Seattle's a Super Bowl team. They don't have one of those guys. You know, New England is a Super Bowl team, and they don't have one of those guys. I mean, Gronkowski's maybe as close as you can get to that in New England. But you look at the great teams, right now the Cowboys don't have one of those guys. You know, you look around, and there are very few of those kinds of guys in the league. I think when you talk about Chip and you talk about that system and what he believes in, he believes firmly in what he does. Now, I don't think that he's of the mind that you can just plug anybody into it and the system takes care of itself. I think one of the reasons why he's made some of the personnel moves he's made is because the guys that he moved out of there didn't fit particularly well. And that may be philosophically didn't fit, it may be in the locker room didn't fit, that may be from a skill standpoint didn't fit, but there was some reason why he moved them out of there. And I, knowing Chip, I would say that the last reason he would move a guy out of there is because of some personal agenda that he had with the guy. Mm. Because, again, he is a guy that wants to win above all things. And so some of the shots that he's taken, you know, for example, LeSean McCoy saying that, you know, it's always the black players that he gets rid of. Well, that to me is just like, that's silliness. I mean, I wouldn't even give that comment 2 cents of credibility. That's just a guy taking a shot. So, but again, that's what happens when you coach in the National Football League. If you get rid of a guy, they're gonna take a shot at you a lot of times, and he's taking his shot. But my question. So, you know, you can talk all that you want to talk about, but I haven't seen him ripping it up either. So, you know, again, the Eagles are just like a lot of teams in this league right now. The Seahawks are in the same, you know, in the same position. The Saints are in the same position. They're struggling. They need to get a spark. They need to get a win. And once you get a win, and then the whole world changes. I know that sounds crazy to us as fans, but I'm just telling you because I live it every day. All it takes is one win, and everything changes inside that locker room. And there's a saying in our business that winning takes care of everything. But you got to get a win. You got to find a way to get that first win.
I think you're right there, Jeff, and I think you raise a great point because you know, you mentioned it there about the who has a Julio Jones around the NFL, who has that dominant playmaker, and there are a lot of teams that you listed that didn't, and the difference is they're winning at the moment. So these are the kind of questions that get raised by media people like myself that you coaches have to deal with when you're not winning. That's just the reality of it, is that more questions are thrown and raised about your team if you're not in the win column. If you're in the win column, certain things get overlooked and forgiven, don't they?
Yeah, and you know what? Like, for example, you take Atlanta right now. Atlanta's 2-0, and they are riding high. I mean, and Dan Quinn's done a phenomenal job of getting those players to believe. They play hard. I mean, they play really, really hard. They get 2 drives in that fourth quarter against New York that are over 10-play drives and basically just take the game over in the fourth quarter. That's a test of wills. That's just imposing your will as a football team on the other team. And, you know, so I'm not willing to anoint them divisional champions right now, but I'm going to tell you something. He's done a phenomenal job there. Matt Ryan's not turning the ball over. Julio Jones, nobody's covering right now. So you look at that football team, and that you know that young running back out of Indiana gives them a spark, and they're playing more physical on defense than they've played in years. And so that's one of the great stories right now in the National Football League to me is, you know, the Falcons now 2-0 and really playing some good football.
Yeah, the Falcons would be one of my stories from week 2. I think you hit the nail on the head as well. They're protecting Matt Ryan better than they've done for a long, long time. The flip side of that is the New York Giants have just blown a big lead for the second game in a row. As we sort of wrap up looking at week 2, Jeff, anything else there that caught your eye? I mean, there was a Matthew Stafford's getting beaten up in Detroit. Cleveland get the first win of the season. What else did we see? Cincinnati looked pretty good. Andy Dalton looks good. What else caught your eye in week 2, Jeff?
Well, I tell you what, the big surprise to me was that Baltimore, who, you know, struggled in their opener.
Yeah.
But they go out to Oakland, who looked just bad, frankly, in their opener. And the Raiders take them to the woodshed. There's something wrong in Baltimore right now. You know, you had one of the best backs in the league last year and one of the most productive backs in the league last year. They can't run the football. They're struggling to score points. You know, obviously when you lose your defensive leader like they did the first week, when we talk about injuries, you know, you lose your defensive leader when Suggs goes down. But still, that Baltimore team at 0-2, there's another team that has to be taking a long, hard look in the mirror and saying, what are we doing? You know, I know this is the third coordinator in 3 years on offense. I know Trestman's not his own running guy. It's a big change they're going through offensively. But you don't want to go to 0-3 because you get to that 0-3, 0-4 area, and it's going to be tough to make those games up down the stretch.
Yeah, it will be tough. I made a game up this week on you. We didn't have the best of weeks picking games, Jeff. I think I went 8-8 and you went 7-9. It was a tough one. There were lots of surprises in week 2. Should we make our picks for week 3?
I think so, because we got to bounce back. We're talking about all these teams got to bounce back. We got to bounce back.
Yeah, I'm not pointing the finger at me, though. I blame you. That's why I'm not coaching the NFL. All right, let's get started then with our picks for Week 3. It starts on Sky Sports on Thursday night. It's the Washington Redskins and their improved ground attack on the road at the New York Giants. Jeff, who do you like in this NFC East battle for two teams who probably feel like they've got a chance now?
Oh, man. I just, every time you look at the Redskins and you say, no way. But yet, they're pounding that thing, and they're, Jay Gruden's doing what he needs to do to win football games. The defense is way, way improved over what it was a year ago. The Giants, to me, just, I don't know if it's Eli's body language or just, I don't think they're very physical on defense. And you look at that fourth quarter that Atlanta had against them, and, I'm going to say, and this is, I'm going to bite my lip when I say it, but I'm going to give the G-men one more shot at it. And this is a game they need to win if they're going to try and win that division.
All right, I'm putting you down for the New York Giants. I've already written in mine. I'm going for the Washington Redskins. That ground attack is me believing in the Redskins at the moment. I'm not completely sure they're going to contend for the playoffs, but Bill Callahan, who came over from Dallas as the offensive line coach, has worked wonders up front. Jeff Fisher said it's like Dallas all over again, and they got 100 yards out of Alfred Morris in week one. They got 100 yards out of Matt Jones in week two, so I'm going Washington. Let's move on to Sunday's games then. And the first one is Cincinnati at Baltimore. So I'll tell you now, Jeff, I like the look of the Bengals at the moment. I like what Andy Dalton's doing. I'm going to go for Cincinnati.
I agree with you on this one. I think the Bengals are playing good football. They're playing good defense. Tyler Eifert has really, come out now. I mean, he's really started the show. He caught another touchdown pass this past weekend, caught four balls. Not a great number of balls, but he's a guy that gives them, a secondary weapon. And Giovanni Bernard, I think, is really an exciting back. So I'm going to take Cincinnati in this one, too.
Yeah, Bengals also have Jeremy Hill, who got benched this past week, and they've got a lot of talent. Tyler Eifert's got more touchdown catches, Jeff, than he had catches all of last season.
Yeah, it's good to see a good young player like that. They drafted him to kind of take over for Gresham, and it certainly happened now. He's really starting to ascend as a player.
All right, next game, New Orleans at Carolina. So we've talked a little bit about the Saints and their problems. Carolina played six quarters without Luke Kuechly. They look absolutely fine on defense. Offensively, it's the Cam Newton show, and there's not much else. And now Jericho Cotter is out for 4 to 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain, but I think Cam gets this done at home against New Orleans.
Right now, if we breathe out, and as bad as the Saints are struggling on defense, I just don't see how they're going to go into Carolina and win this game. This is a big game for Carolina because it's a divisional game at home, and certainly you've got a wounded team coming into play. So this is one that the Panthers need, and I think they'll get.
All right, both going Carolina in that one then. Let's move on to Oakland at Cleveland. So they both get a win in week two. Both second-year quarterbacks look pretty good, although I think Derek Carr was more consistent. Johnny Manziel still lost a couple of fumbles for the Browns. No guarantee he's going to be the starter when Josh McCown comes back from that concussion. I probably still fancy Cleveland at home here, though. Jeff, what do you think on this one?
Well, I'm going to go with my heart on this one. I think the Raiders get a little energy after that big win that they got over Baltimore. That's a quality opponent that they beat. And, I don't think that they'll give up those kind of explosive plays that Cleveland was able to get against Tennessee last week. So I'm going to take the Raiders.
All right. I'm going to go Cleveland. You've gone Oakland. Here's a tricky one then for the Dallas Cowboys. They're back home. It's Brandon Weeden at quarterback. There's no Dez Bryant. And they face those Atlanta Falcons who are 2-0. So a battle of two 2-0 teams, Jeff. But obviously the feel-good factor is much higher around the Falcons at the moment. But Dallas is playing good defense. Playing good defense at the moment.
Yeah, Dallas is playing good defense. There's no question about that. But you still got to score to win in this game. And, the Cowboys are going to have to really lean on that offensive line. I think Atlanta is on a roll. I think they have a lot of confidence in their ability. And, I don't know who the Cowboys are going to be able to stick on Julio Jones to hold him down. So I'm going to take Atlanta to go to 3-0, and how about that? We're talking about the 3-0 out.
That would be incredible, but I'm going to pick the Cowboys to go 3-0 instead. This is one of the ones they scrape out ugly. This is a 17-13 or a 20-16 game. They rely on the defense. That unit has played well the first 2 weeks, and I think they pick up the slack this weekend. So Tampa Bay at Houston. And before you make your pick, Jeff, so the Texans did go with Ryan Mallett as the starter, which means all of the stuff that Bill O'Brien was talking about on Hard Knocks, about, you know, we're not gonna let it go eight games, but you're not on a short leash. Brian Hoyer lost his job after three quarters.
You know what? It's one of those things where that's why you don't make those kind of public proclamations.
Yeah.
Because you get put in a situation where now if you change your mind, and sometimes necessity, you know, forces you to change your mind, you end up looking like a guy that you can't be trusted. Now, what I look at Houston, and the thing that concerns me, they don't run the ball at all.
No.
I mean, obviously they don't have their top back, but Alfred Blue's a good back, and I think he touched the ball four times as a running back. They threw the ball 50 some times. Ryan Mallett is not Tom Brady, and they, you know, I know O'Brien, you know, they work together in New England, yada, 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 and all that stuff, but the reality of it is he can't throw the ball 50 sometimes for them to win. They have to find a running game. They have to get some balance offensively, and until they do that, it's going to be a struggle. So, you know, again, it's hard for me to like a Houston team that right now is just so one-dimensional.
You're right that Ryan Mallett is not Tom Brady. I'd also say he's not Cam Newton, which means you don't do Cam's Superman celebration when you score a touchdown and you're down by two scores in the game. I mean, I don't know what he's thinking of there. Just again, this is a guy we've read about in the, you know, in the off season, and wondered if he would be the face of this franchise. He oversleeps and misses a practice after he loses the starting job. We saw that on Hard Knocks, and now he's out imitating other quarterbacks. But I do think he's got better defense behind him, and he's at home, so I'm going to give the win to Houston. Who are you going, Jeff?
Well, I'm going to take Houston, but again, I'm really concerned about them, and I'm really concerned about even their defense. They, you know, J.J. Watt had another sack, but you know, there's an awful lot of pressure on that defense when you throw the ball 53 times a game like they did on offensively. If they can get some balance in their attack, I'll take Houston.
All right, let's move on to our next game. San Diego at Minnesota. So Adrian Peterson had a big game, but he did have three fumbles. San Diego went on the road, and they lost last week to Cincinnati. This is a tricky one to call as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. This is a tough game. You know what? Let's talk about Minnesota for a second, because it brings up a really good point. Teddy Bridgewater, and I'm not the biggest Teddy Bridgewater fan in the world. Haven't been since they drafted him. But boy, did I like the way that he responded to the tough coaching that Mike Zimmer gave him after last week's game.
Yeah.
He, you know, Zimmer came out and made comments very similar to Pagano's. And, you know, a lot of times quarterbacks don't handle public criticism very well. But he went right back in the media and said, yeah, that's what I need. I need tough coaching. I need tough love. I perform better when much is demanded of me. And he came back and played a really good football game the other night. So, again, I think San Diego is a good team. I don't know if they're good enough defensively when Adrian Peterson starts to crank it up. So I'm going to give Minnesota the nod in this one.
Yeah, I think these are two good teams that are a couple of rungs below the best teams in the NFL, but Minnesota are at home, so I'm going to go Vikings as well. We both go Vikings in that one. Jacksonville at New England. Jacksonville got their first win at home against Miami last week, but on the road at New England, I don't see any way that Tom Brady and that offensive juggernaut slows down. So I'm going New England there, Jeff.
Well, New England's going to have a little bit of a, you know, challenge this week because, and you know, the guy in the hood he'll work at it, but he's going to talk to them all week about not having success, Flu, and not, you know, letting what they did in New England carry over, in Buffalo rather, carry over into this game. The reality of it is they're a much better football team than Jacksonville's got. I was really pleased for Gus to get that win, particularly against, you know, a rival like Miami, but I think this is New England's football game. They're a much better football team, top to bottom.
All right, the Philadelphia Eagles at the New York Jets. So in two games, the Jets' defense, which don't forget has got 9 first-round draft picks, have forced 10 turnovers in two games. Who do you like in this one?
I tell you what, I like the way Todd Bowles has got them playing. Mm. And, you know, they are energized. You know, Eric Decker's playing real well. And, you know, Fitzpatrick, for all of people talking about how he's just a game manager and he can't do this and can't do that, well, he's played well enough for them to win, and that's the bottom line. You got to play well enough to win. I tell you what, I kind of like the Jets right now. I like the way that they're physical. I like the kind of defense they play. And if you play great defense, you always have a chance. So I'm going to give the Jets a nod.
All right, I'm going to give it to the Jets as well. And, Jeff, if they do win this weekend, the Jets will make NFL history. Of all the teams that have come to London, the Jets will be the only one to ever come to Wembley Stadium undefeated. How about that?
That'd be awesome. I'll tell you what, I know that Jets UK, you know, nation that's out there is really passionate about, you know, about their football team. And I think a 3-0 Jets team in Wembley would be really, that'd be really something special.
Yeah, I think both the Jets fans here in the UK would really enjoy that. There's a couple of them, I think.
Boy, oh boy, spoken like a true Dolphin. Oh, man.
Let's move on then. Pittsburgh at St. Louis. And we saw what that Steelers offense can do last week against San Francisco. They're going on the road. The Rams are a different team at home. But the Rams, again, they give you what they gave you last year. Big win followed by a disappointing loss. I think with Le'Veon Bell back, even though it's in St. Louis, I'd give this one to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm going to go Pittsburgh, too. But I'll tell you what, you know what, the Rams, holy Toledo. I mean, they are civil. They got more personalities than anybody I've ever seen. You don't have any idea what you're going to get out of them. As good as they are on defense and as well as they play in week one, then they follow it up with just a, you know, a stinker in week two. And, you know, I'm not, like you say, Washington's better. Yeah, they run the ball better. Yeah. You know, Callahan's made a difference, yeah. But how can you have those kind of people up front and get gouged like they got gouged last week? So until St. Louis shows me that they can be more consistent, I can't go with them. I got to go against them.
All right. The Indianapolis Colts, we've both gone Steelers on that one. The Indianapolis Colts at the Tennessee Titans. This is where, you know, if you're a Colts fan or if we're looking for Andrew Luck and the Colts to bounce back, this is a division where you can get back into things pretty quickly because, you know, no one's going to run away with this division, really, except the Colts, if you look at pedigree. So I would have to give this one to Indianapolis. I think this is where they start to try and get things back on track. But just one other point, you know, on top of the... You know, Frank Gore's got to do more as well. He can't be fumbling down near the goal line when there's no one near him. So I'm going Colts.
All right. Where's the game being played?
It's in Tennessee.
All right, it's in Tennessee. There's no bigger win in pro football than in your division on the road. In your division on the road is like a 4-point game. If you get 2 points for a win, winning on the road in your division is like a 4-point game because that's, you know, you say you need to win all your home games and split on the road. That's the model for getting into the playoffs. So for Indianapolis, this is a huge game. This is a tip, in my opinion, and I don't want to put too much on it. Week three of the NFL season, but this may be a tipping point game for the Colts because if they can win this thing on the road in the division, that can heal a lot of what's ailing them right now in the locker room and publicly. If they go down to Tennessee and get beat, Neil, it may totally unravel.
I agree.
It may totally unravel. I think the Colts will rally up. I think you'll see the leadership qualities that Andrew Luck possesses. And this is a game that he can take a step and become even more of a leader on this football team because he will have led through adversity created by his head coach and his teammate.
All right. So, and by his own interceptions. But let's go San Francisco at Arizona. I think... San Francisco would be glad to be not making a trip all the way east like they did in Pittsburgh. But I think Arizona looked really good, Jeff. And I think Carson Palmer is every inch the franchise quarterback that they missed so badly down the stretch last year, so I'm going Arizona in this one.
Yeah, I like Arizona very much. They play good defense. Carson Palmer, obviously, is the guy that they need at, you know, at the pivot, making the decisions, delivering football. And how about Fitz? How about Larry Fitzgerald? Just at the time when everybody said he's on the downhill part of his career, you know, yada, 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 he comes out and he has played great football early in this season. So I'm going to give Arizona my nod also.
All right, so we'll move on to Buffalo at Miami. We have this game on Sky Sports on Sunday night, and there are some rumblings in Miami as well, Jeff. There's talk of the defense being too complex, Kevin Coyle being under pressure as defensive coordinator. And if you want a stat to back that up, the Dolphins were supposed to be one of the best defensive lines in the NFL, and they're going up against Washington and Jacksonville over the past 2 weeks, who don't have good offensive lines, and the Dolphins have produced one sack. On the other side of the ball, Brandon Albert is now out injured, and I think the Dolphins struggle in this one, so I will give it to the Bills.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. The thing that I'm hearing is that there's some challenges with Ndamukong Suh playing outside the team, doing things on his own. And obviously that's not good. This is a Dolphin team that's way too talented to struggle against Washington and lose to Jacksonville. And I know you played Jacksonville on the road, but that's Jacksonville, right? And you're supposed to be challenging for the AFC East title, and you struggle against two bad teams, two teams that you should have feasted on and got great confidence going into week three. The Dolphins scare me. I mean, I'm not a Dolphin fan, but I'm going to tell you something. If I was a Dolphin fan, I would be worried right now, because this is a team that's got way too much talent to be playing the level of football that they're playing right now. And so, again, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, on the freelancing thing, which is, again, interesting because this is a production business. I've spoken to three or four offensive linemen, spent a good deal of time with some offensive linemen around the NFL this offseason. And one of the biggest freelancers in the NFL, Jeff, is J.J. Watt, according to offensive linemen around the NFL. But J.J. Watt makes the plays. So if you're going to do that freelancing and go outside of the team system, you better make some plays. And Sue hasn't, and the Dolphins haven't.
Well, here's the difference to me. You don't hear anybody talking about J.J. Watt going outside the system, because that's what the system allows him to do.
Right, yeah.
If you're in a system that allows the great player to just go make plays, a la Junior Seau. I mean, Junior Seau played entirely out of the system in San Diego, and I know that for a fact because June was the head coach in San Diego. But they gave him the freedom to, hey, Junior, if you feel it, go make the play. Mm. If you see it, go make the play. Well, that's fine, and I'm sure that's what they do in Texas, in Houston with J.J. Watt. But that's not what the system in Miami is designed for. And so now you got guys playing outside the system. The coordinators getting roasted in the paper because the system's too difficult. The players aren't playing at the level that they're capable of playing. Those are all, I guess, symptoms, if you would, Neil, of deeper issues. And that's what's always hurt this Dolphin team. They're talented, but whether it's, you know, the locker room issues that they had with Incognito, the all of the stuff that always swirls around this team. They need strong leadership, and right now they're not getting it. And until they get it, whether it's by the coaching staff or the players in that locker room, this team is going to underachieve. So, you know, again, they got to get it right. They got to get it fixed, because they're too good a football team to struggle against bad teams.
All right, so call me an optimist. Jeff, are you going to Miami this weekend?
Yeah, I'm going to say Miami. And
are you?
I'm going to say Miami because it's at home. It's in your division. It's when you got to play. I'm going to give them a pass and say that the first 2 weeks were an anomaly. You played a bad Washington team that you anticipated. You're just going to go out there, walk through it, and you had to struggle to beat them. Then you go up to Jacksonville, and it's Jacksonville, and you're thinking, well, the division starts next week when Buffalo comes to town. Now you got a chance to prove it, because this is when you have to step up. This is when you have to show up at home in your division.
All right. Well, I hope I'm wrong and you're right on that one. We've got three games to do, and then I know we need to get you off to the beach. What are they doing, Key West? Is it nice there? Is it hot? Is it sunny?
It's beautiful. It's 30 degrees centigrade. The sun is out. and I'm going paddleboarding today, and then I'm going to spend the rest of the afternoon on the beach, and then I'm going to chase Papa Hemingway's ghost around this town a little bit.
All right, well, that sounds good. Let's just get these last few picks out of the way. And I didn't mean to not sound enthusiastic then when I said it sounds good. It does sound good, but I just can't fully feel it because I'm not there.
Well, follow my Twitter account. I'm going to give you a blow-by-blow.
All right, so Chicago at Seattle then. Jimmy Clausen's going to get the start at quarterback. Seattle need the win. They're at home. This is an easy one for me. It's Seahawks.
Yeah, I'm going to go Seahawks here. Seahawks got to win. Bears defense struggling still. They've got a long – Foxy's got a long ways to go to get that thing fixed. And I think one of the things that's got to get fixed in Chicago is penalties. Holy God, did you see that game? They just really bad penalties. Bad football teams usually take a lot of penalties. And, you know, again, John Fox walked into a tough situation. He's going to get it fixed. I believe that in Chicago. But it isn't going to get fixed this week. And Pete needs a W. They need a W in Seattle. They don't want one. They need one.
Yeah, and they need one in Detroit. And that's the Sunday night game, Denver at Detroit. Actually, both these teams have struggled to protect the quarterback. Peyton Manning has been sacked a lot. Matthew Stafford's getting absolutely beaten up. And Detroit actually don't have much of a running game to help him out. Stafford was their leading rusher last week as well. So Denver at Detroit, I don't think the Broncos are perfect. But I know they've got more than enough to get after Matthew Stafford, who actually may not even play in the game. He's so banged up. So I'm going to go Denver.
I agree with you, Neil. I think the difference in this game is the front and, you know, the ability with Ware and Von Miller to get after the quarterback. You know, what a change in Denver. What a change in Denver Wade Phillips has made. And he has really got that team playing at a high level. I don't believe that Peyton is what he once was, but, you know, he can still make decisions. You saw that in that last drive. Get him in a two-minute situation, and, you know, he can deliver the football. I think this is a game that Denver is going to win, although, again, I think that Detroit's challenges, frankly, are just as you described it. They are inability to protect the passer, and now that passer may not play in the game.
Last one then, Jeff. Monday Night Football, Kansas City at Green Bay. We know all about the stats of Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau Field. No interception thrown there since 2012. They won against Seattle. I think I like Kansas City, and I like Kansas City as a playoff contender. But for me, Green Bay are a Super Bowl contender. That's the difference. And I think at home they get this win.
I agree with you. I think that the Packers are one of the elite teams. As long as you have that guy at quarterback and you have Matthews on defense. You know, let's talk about Matthews for just a second. Here's a guy that may be one of the best outside linebackers in the NFL. One of those guys that has that rare skill set to go get the quarterback from 2 feet as an outside linebacker.
Yep.
He's moved inside to play inside backer. And he doesn't want to do it. He'd rather be outside chasing the quarterback around. But he's done what's best for that football team, and their defense, when he moved back inside to play inside linebacker, their defense has gotten much, much better. I like the Packers in this one. I'm still bruised with the Chiefs. I mean, how can you give up 2 touchdowns in whatever it was, the last minute of the football game? And, you know, particularly when you have a game, you had that game won, you had it salted away, and they went soft on defense in that two-minute situation. They came back and beat them. How many times have we seen that where you go away from what you do well in those last 2 minutes and it comes back and hurts you?
Jeff, I made a point on Sky on Sunday night. I think they, in a way, they've taken some of the teeth out of Clay Matthews. He was one of the best outside rushers in the game. But I think you're right. He's done it for the good of the team. And there was a quote on Sunday Night Football where he said, "I like hitting quarterbacks, not fullbacks," but he's still done it, and he's still sort of sacrificed his own stats and potentially sacrificed his own legacy a little bit. But he's, you know, he's done that for the good of the team, and there should be some credit for that.
Absolutely, and I think that he doesn't get enough credit for that. And, you know, in this day of this quote selfish athlete, the guy that's all about his own numbers, all about his own career, all about his own thing, here's a guy that puts all of that aside and plays a role that he frankly doesn't want to play, but does it for the betterment of all the guys on that football team. And that's kind of the Packer way, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what you see? Isn't that what you see amongst that football team? And that's bred by the front office. Teddy Thompson and those, that's the kind of people that they go after in the draft. And that's the kind of people that they go after. When they make a free agency move, that's the kind of person that they go after in free agency. And I think Peppers and Matthews have really, really helped that defense. B.J. Raji's back. B.J. Raji's in better shape. B.J. Raji looks more like the B.J. Raji we saw a couple years ago. But that's going to give the Packers a chance to get to the Super Bowl. I really believe they're a Super Bowl contender.
Mm. Jeff, this is bad news for you because you're waiting to get on that paddleboard and you're in paradise. But we're setting a record here. We're over an hour and 10 minutes for this podcast already. And I want to get a couple of questions in the mailbag. So let's quickly get to those. Elliot Lee says, Jeff, what exactly is an explosive play? Jeff, I guess this changes from team to team. They have them up on the board. You know, some say it's a 20-yard catch. Others say it's a turnover. You know, what is an explosive play?
Well, an explosive play, is, like you say, it depends on who you're talking to. As a defensive coach on our board, what we say is any run of over 10 yards and any pass of over 15 yards is an explosive play.
Yep.
Right, now, sometimes offensive coaches will make it different. They'll say it's a run of over 15 and a pass of over 30. It just comes down to what you determine as an impact play. And what's happened, Neil, and this thing on explosive plays is really interesting. You know, in your father's NFL, it was all about time of possession. Well, you look at the time of possession now, and it has become almost a who cares statistic.
Yeah.
Right? And what happens now is this game is about explosive plays. It's about explosive plays, sacks, and penalties. Those are the things that are going to determine whether you win or learn, along with turnovers. Those are the things that are going to determine whether you win or lose. There's a statistic in the Canadian Football League, right? Now, I know this is a little bit skewed because it's our league, but in the Canadian Football League, you know, 30% of all drives that start end in a touchdown in our league. If you sack the quarterback in a drive, that percentage of touchdowns in a drive goes down to 6%.
Wow.
So that's how important those kinds of plays. And a sack is what we consider defensively an explosive play. Mm. A turnover is an explosive play. So those big plays, if you will, are what really determine the game today. Not time of possession, not how well you run the football, frankly, but, you know, whether you're able to overcome, you know, bad field position because you turn the field on a big play.
Yeah, I think I saw on Sunday night New Orleans were way up in time of possession over Tampa Bay, but Tampa Bay had all the turnovers that forced, and that was what made them win the game. One last question. David Hughes, he simply asks, Jeff, Tim Tebow to Dallas? David, stop it. Stop. Just stop. Stop.
He never goes away. He's like a bad rash. He just never goes away. I tell you what, Tim's doing exactly what Tim should be doing, and that's commentating on SEC football. And, you know, he's moved on with his life, and I think all you Tebow fans out there should let him move on with his life.
I would agree. He is like a bad rash. Gets right up your backside, Jeff. Had enough of him. Time to move on. And on that note, shall we let you go paddleboarding?
All right, man. I appreciate it. It's great doing this with you every week, and I can't wait to get back next week because I feel like we're gonna get back on a win streak.
Listen, we've gone so long, it almost is next week, but this has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We thank you for this listening to us on this marathon effort, but there was a lot to talk about in week two and looking ahead to week three. He's off to the beach. He's got his paddleboard ready. Say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.